You know, encounters with angels and other messengers of God are apparently not just confined to just individuals. There have been reports from all over the world of locations where large numbers of people claim to receive signs and even messages from apparently heaven. Our guest Joan Wester Anderson shares some of those locations with us next as Coast to Coast AM continues. And welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Chris McGill, filling in for the vacationing George Norrie. Very special Christmas week program tonight, talking about angelic encounters with our special guest, Joan Wester Anderson. Now, Joan, I've read about several locations around the world where it's reported that either angels or and even sometimes the Virgin Mary herself have appeared to not just one person, but we're talking sometimes hundreds of people. Tell me about some of those locations.
Probably the best known site for that is Medjugorje in the former Yugoslavia. That's been going on since, I think, the 80s, where Mary is supposed to be appearing every single night. And people come from all over the world. It's a place of great healing, from what I understand. Not so much physical healing, but a spiritual healing. People seem to come back from that particular site much more at peace, much better equipped to handle things. It's just kind of an amazing thing. But I remember how surprised I was when I heard that it was not just Catholics that were getting these visions. Mary apparently appeared several times in Rwanda before the traumatic events started there with the starvations and everything, kind of almost as a warning. And she's been in Egypt. She was on top of a church, as I recall, at one point, and there were very few Christians. This was more an Orthodox area of Egypt, and here were all these thousands of people in the streets looking up and pointing at her, and everyone apparently could see her. There's a lot of manifestations that come from this too, like the spinning of the sun and other things. I honestly don't know what to make of all of these. The Catholic Church investigates very few of them because it's kind of taken for granted that these things can and do appear, and the resources to try to prove them as real are not necessarily there all the time. People just don't have the time or the money to look for these things. And they just figure, well, you know, we're not telling anybody to believe it or not to believe it. It's just kind of up to you. We had this in Chicago last year. We had, in fact, it was at the end of last winter under an overpass. We had people said it was melting salt, but it was definitely an outline of the Virgin. And people came from all over to stand there and light candles and look. And, you know, I just think in some ways people just want a physical explanation or something that they can hang on to give them some hope.
Are you aware of any, you know, concrete evidence that's been gathered at any of these particular locations? Because, you know, there will be some people who think it's mass hysteria or whatever.
I don't think it's mass hysteria because it goes on for so long.
Yeah.
There are people that go to Medjugorje that don't have any response at all. They don't see much of anything. They don't seem to think it's all that great. And then 3 months after they're home, all of a sudden they realize that they were being prepared for something. Something happens in their life or something like that, and they realize that, wow, if I hadn't been to Medjugorje, I don't know if I would be able to handle this the way I'm doing it now. So I don't think it's ever been a question of mass hysteria. But I do know there is one place, and I think it's in Central America, which the Catholic Church has okayed, and it's kind of it was on the fast track, more or less. And one of the things that happens there is that they get these gigantic blue butterflies that fly around whenever Mary is supposed to be coming. And that's such an amazing natural phenomenon that it kind of caught everybody off guard. And they did send teams down there to see if it all seemed to be legitimate, and it is. It's just another example of the fact that, you know, heaven and earth are very close.
Right. Now, I received an email from Fred in San Francisco asking, are there also bad angels?
Oh, Fred, yes, you and I know that. There certainly are. Again, if we're going to Scripture as a source, and this could be an allegory, this could be, you know, not exactly the way it happened, but in some way resembling this, the angels, as we said, were created first, and approximately one-third of them, says the Bible, decided that they would not serve. You know, this is down through the centuries. People say, I will not serve, and they put themselves ahead of others, and this is just totally contrary to the Christmas message. But anyway, at least one-third of them said no, and so there was a huge battle in heaven, and Michael the archangel led the forces and tossed the others out. And according to one prayer in the tradition, it says that the evil ones roam the world seeking the ruin of souls. And you can ruin a soul simply by discouragement, or keeping that person from growing in his faith, or just allowing conditions of poverty to continue so that people just can't get out of it. Things like that. Those bad angels or devils don't have a lot of power except what we give them. But if we open a door to that, soon we're to the point where we're worshiping false gods, and we're off. We're off the track. So, yes, I don't think it's a little angel on your right side that's a good angel and a little angel on your left shoulder that's the bad one, and they're both whispering in your ear. I don't think it's quite that simple, but everyone has sensed evil at one time or another, and I do believe it's absolutely here.
Now, these bad angels we're speaking of, are they called demons, or is this something totally mm-hmm. different?
No, okay. They're called demons. Oh, yes. In fact, you know, Christ was tempted when he went out into the desert before he started his public ministry. He had to take 40 days there and go out and mm-hmm. fast and pray. And sure, you know, it's very detailed as to what that demon did to him as far as promising him everything. They're not always ugly either. We should keep in mind that evil sometimes is masquerades as something beautiful. And I'm always telling the children, if I'm talking to them in school or something about angels, I'm always telling them not to open any doors. Don't play with Ouija boards. Don't you know, don't do those kinds of things, because I remember once I knew a minister who I would have staked my life on him as being holy mm-hmm. in all ways. And he told me once that he was in his study doing something, and they had the kind of house where they had several children, and the kids could bring their friends, and they were always made very welcome. And so one of his sons came to his study, and he said, Dad, one of the girls that I brought home tonight, she doesn't look good at all. She's kind of having a fit. Well, the dad, the minister, went quickly out to the playroom, and there were several teenagers looking at this girl who looked as if she was having some sort of epileptic, but he sensed something more, and he kind of got her through this, and actually didn't perform an exorcism, but was close, and he commanded if anything was in her to come out, and this really terrible voice came out from the girl, and it said, "We have permission," and he said that was awful to me, because I thought, oh no. And so he began to pray, and he enlisted all the kids, and they all prayed, and she came around, and then he, instead of calling for the paramedics, he thought she was okay enough for them to have a little talk. So he took her into his office and asked her what was going on, and she had been modeling for pornographic movies in order to get some money. And at age 15, you can just imagine how her soul and spirit had been
right.
already ruined, and yet she had opened the door herself. So it's never a case of us being overpowered, I don't think. I think we have to say yes to these kinds of things first.
So you're,
that's
you're
why
saying
I'm always telling the kids, you know, knock it off.
Right, you let your guard down. Now, with the war in Iraq ongoing still, have you heard a lot of stories of angelic encounters coming from the front lines there, from our soldiers?
I really have. I have traced the steps of a couple of platoons, or maybe they're larger divisions. My husband always says, gosh, you're always saying platoon, and, you know, you mean this. And but women aren't real swift when it comes to the military. But yes, I've been in touch with some mothers of service people, both men and women, who have told me that what they did when they sent their sons and daughters off was to ask angels to be in charge and take charge. Just as it says in the 91st Psalm, I will send my angels around you to guard you in all your ways. And so they've stood on that promise. And one particular mother told me that her son was the leader of whatever group it was, and she told the entire group that they would have angels around them. And then she went online and she enlisted the help of everyone she could find to have angels prayed around this particular group of soldiers. And they just were home, I think, about 2 or 3 months ago. They've been brought back, and they had no casualties in the entire...
That's wonderful.
Yes, it was. And I think, you know, again, does God love the soldiers that he takes home with him less than the soldiers that he allows to live? Not at all. And I don't know if praying angel protection around a soldier gives him that extra bit of protection either. But I think that the men themselves, when they know they're being prayed for, are just that much more confident and aware, I think.
Because I guess, you know, if it is your time to go, it's your time to go.
And, oh, yeah.
And even though it's, you know, it's the hardest thing for us to understand sometimes, especially when it's a family member, someone close to us, a friend, or whatever. But I guess sometimes you have to realize that, that there is a time and a place.
Well, and there's no way we can change it. Of a person's life has nothing to do with the preciousness of it. I mean, we each have a plan, and I don't think it's predestination necessarily, but there's a plan for each of us. We've been fitted with particular talents and abilities and likes and dislikes in order to do the job that we're called upon to do, and those jobs change from time to time, and sometimes we don't have as much time to do them as we thought we did. But as far as I'm concerned, all of this is just part of the way it's supposed to be. And the trauma and the sorrow comes for those who are left, but not those who are going home.
I received an email just a couple of minutes ago from a listener, and he made that the subject heading, heavy question, and it is. His question, which he wanted me to ask you, was about, we talked about children earlier and the angels that children are evidently able to see at some point in their lives. His question was, where are the angels guarding the children who unfortunately suffer a tragic early death, be it murdered or whatever? Does this go back to the fact that, you know, it's sad, but it's just their time?
Or? I think so. I think the hardest part for us is, as good, humane, decent people, is to watch children suffer. There's something so wrong about it. And somebody once said to me, you know, well, how? What about the children? And I said, what about them? And they said, well, what can we do? You know, how can we fix this? And I think that was the point. We're supposed to do this. We could sit around and let angels take over and, you know, come in and do everything for us. And this is not the way it's supposed to be. Angels are there as supposedly a backup system, but human beings are supposed to be earth angels to one another. So I think that we have, each of us, been given an opportunity to serve. And perhaps it's, in this case, it's serving children that need our help. Then that's what we have to do. On my website, I have usually an update on Thornton, Arkansas, which is an area where the people that sign up for my website and I have made friends with a group down there who has absolutely nothing. They're totally poverty stricken. We try to send them shoes so the children can go to school. This is in our own country. These children have no coats. Their parents have no work. It's just one of those really dismal, horrendous places. But we have hundreds of us shopping garage sales for them and everything else. They're much better off since we discovered them. And there's no reason why lots and lots of people in our country couldn't be doing that for a whole bunch of other little towns. Mm-hmm. You do what you can do. If you have the power to do something, then you do it. If you don't have the power, you're not expected. I mean, we can't lead the country, for example. We didn't win the election. But we can go and feed a child, and maybe in the way God looks at it, it's just as important.
That's a good point. And in the last couple of minutes we have in this particular segment, what seems to be the main message that people are getting from these encounters with angels? Is there a particular message you're hearing more and more?
Yes. It's the same message, I think, that has come down through the ages. Fear not. That's what they said to the shepherds on the hillside, and that's what they're saying to us. There's no room for fear. There's no need for fear. And I think that message is particularly poignant now that we look around and we see the devastation with Katrina and the different things like that. How can you help but be afraid? But, you know, sometimes we pass through periods in history where life is very difficult. And maybe it's because we're not listening. I'm not sure of that at all. But I just wonder if there is any kind of cause and effect at all about the way we keep God out of everything, and then we expect him to save us from tornadoes and floods and fires and all those things, you know.
And we've had a lot of that going on in the last couple of years.
This has been very difficult.
Where do you think we're headed? Do you think this is, are we getting signs that something worse, unfortunate, is on the way? Or
you know, I have no talent but I to see into the future, but I keep reading that same phrase, if my people would humble themselves and turn from their wicked ways and pray, then I will hear from heaven and I will heal their land. I don't know. It just seems like it's an appropriate prayer for right now.
The prayer of healing and the prayer of peace?
Mm-hmm. If my people will turn from their ways and pray, then I will heal their land. Well, when do we have an opportunity to pray? We can do it by ourselves all the time, but we have completely closed the door on public prayer, and perhaps that's where we should open it again. I remember in one of my earlier books, I was writing about the Mississippi floods. I believe that happened in 95 because I was doing a lot of traveling then, and I kept flying across them and just gasping at the amount of farmland and everything that was just devastated with all this rain and the melting snow. It was just a tremendous amount of area-wise that was ruined. Well, during that time, Quincy, Illinois, had this problem where the water just kept getting higher and higher, and they did everything. You know, they put the sandbags out. They've been through floods before, but never like this. And certainly they prayed. But the mayor finally suggested that everyone come out and pray in public, and they all did. They prayed for the rain to stop. The rain never stopped, but the flood stopped, and the water never rose after that.
Don't go away. More with Angelic Encounters and Miracles of Prayer with our special guest, Joan Wester Anderson. It's all coming up next as Coast to Coast AM continues. And as we enter the early morning hours around the country, we're talking about heavenly guardians and angels. Have you had an encounter with what you believe to be an angel? Next hour, we'll open the lines for questions as well as your chance to share your stories and experiences of unexplained divine intervention. More with our guest, Joan Wester Anderson, after this break on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast AM. I'm Chris McGill, filling in for the vacationing George Norrie. Our guest, Joan Wester Anderson. We're talking about angelic encounters. Now, Joan, I had an email come in from Bruce in Ontario, Canada, wanting to know if you could answer this question for us. Are you aware of anyone who's had an experience where divine intervention changed the path of maybe a natural disaster or an accident or something that they were about to be involved in?
Oh, yes. I was thinking that in The Power of Miracles, which is another one of my books, I kind of delved into the odder or the rarer forms of miracles, because my thesis always is that miracles happen every day and they're little and they're dear and personal and all that. But right. As far as huge things went, one of the most amazing was an actual friend of mine. I actually knew this person while this happened to her. You know, that always kind of blows your mind, too.
Mm-hmm.
She was part of a ministry team, and they had gone out to either Idaho or Montana, but it was a rather open countryside, and she and a priest and a couple of other speakers were putting on a retreat for a large, large group of, I think it was Native Americans. There might have been some people from the towns as well, but it was mostly Native Americans. There were probably 2,000 of them or so that had gathered for this kind of retreat, I guess you might call it. And there were hurricanes or tornadoes, must have been tornadoes, in the area, but nothing too terrible. So they went ahead with it, and they were in the middle of Mass, I think, when they got the word, the sirens went off, and they got the word that there was a tornado heading for them. Now, all they have is a tent. Everyone else is sitting on the grass, and there's no shelter anywhere. So they didn't know what to do, except their faith told them that it was okay to pray against these things. So they simply held hands with as many people as they could find, went out into the audience, didn't want to panic people, but, you know, grabbed a few and went in the back and continued on with the Mass, and they prayed, and the tornado came, and it split and went around the sides of where they were and then joined itself again and went on, just as if it was, excuse me, going
and
around.
And just went right around.
And, of course, now I would never put anything like that in a book until I checked it out. So one of the first things I did was call the town, and they had it in their archives because it made the front page of the paper the next day. There were that many witnesses that saw it. So it wasn't something that, you know, we had dreamed up or, you know, maybe wishful thinking. And, yes, those things happen quite a lot. One fellow told me from down in Florida, this was maybe 10 years ago, he had lost two orange crops to early frosts and was so frustrated, didn't know whether he should continue trying to make a living here doing this or what. And he realized that what he hadn't done was pray over his crops. He had done everything else, lighted whatever it was you were supposed to light, you know, those things that burn when cold weather comes. But he said he had never done that. He had never asked God to be in charge. So he said he posted angels. I love that. He posted angels around his orange groves when the next frost came. And, of course, he did everything else he was supposed to, too. He lit his lamps. And when the morning came, his was the only land that had been spared all the frost. So you think, do we have a vindictive God who is going to take away orange groves from people who don't pray? No, but I think it might just be an attention getter. You know, hello, I'm the author of all life. Give me a little of your time, and I'll see to it that your crops are healthy. And if they're not healthy, I'll help you get through that, too.
Now, what about people who don't believe in God at all, atheists? I mean, have you received stories?
I don't know how they get through life. But yes, I did have a story of a man who came home from Vietnam, an atheist. He wasn't one when he went over there, but he came back. He said, I think probably by choice, he simply said, if a God would allow things like I've seen, then I don't want to believe in him. And he just closed the door. And you could certainly see why. And he went, got married, became a telephone lineman, had a few children, was leading, from all outward observances, a rather ordinary life. But inside, he was a broken spirit, really. Had never really talked to anybody about all the things he had seen and done. And so one day he's sitting in a Bob's Big Boy restaurant. People, when they write me things, they always give me the most adorable details. And he wanted me to know that he was sitting up at the counter and that this was one of those places where you could see the door and you could see every table in the place. It wasn't that big. He's sitting there minding his own business, and some person he feels a tap on his shoulder, and he turns around, and there's this nerdy-looking guy. That's all he could say, kind of a black, shiny suit on, skinny. And the fellow said, God wants to see you in church. Well, Bob was horrified. He thought, mm-hmm. Why me? Why am I getting picked out of the crowd, you know? And he said to the guy, I don't live around here. And the fellow said, I didn't say what church. I said, in church. Well, here again, Bob got irritated, and he thought, why is he picking on me? And he swung around to ask him that, and the guy was gone. He said there was no way he could have gotten through the crowd because he could see everyone, and it was just like that, just as quick as that. And then Bob said he realized that no one on either side of him had seemed to notice this guy. No one was looking at him strangely or wondering what that was all about. It was as if he was the only one who had seen this stranger. So he went home and he told his wife about it, and she said, Bob, I think if God wants to see you in church enough that he would send someone to tell you, maybe we ought to go. So the stranger hadn't said what church, and they didn't know of any churches in the area, so they got the telephone directory and opened it up to the yellow pages and had their oldest child point, and they went the following week, and it was the only church in that whole area that had a ministry for Vietnam vets. And so Bob was able to, sometime later, you know, get used to it and then come to these meetings, at which point he was able to share with the only other people that would have ever understood him, and eventually really had an inner healing, which was what he needed all along.
It definitely makes you wonder. Now, you were talking earlier about Archangel Michael. Mm-hmm. Have you received accounts of anyone having an encounter with Angel Michael or
yes.
anyone else that's listed in the Bible?
Uh-huh. You would think that we planned this, wouldn't you? Because you keep asking all the right kind of questions. Yes, St. Michael, as we know, is a warrior.
Right.
And there was a man in, let's see now, he's from New Orleans, but he no longer lives there. And I was actually put onto him because he owns a fleet of trucks, which he has dedicated to St. Michael. And someone was out on the road and passed one of these trucks and emailed me to ask me, did I know about a trucking firm? And I didn't, but I started looking. And when I found this man, I discovered why he had named his trucking firm the St. Michaels, because he had a small business and he had developed certain elements in the business that were very unique. He had patents on them and a few other things. But being a small businessman, he couldn't manufacture these things himself. So he was looking around for a partner. And a company, which shall remain nameless, sent representatives, and they said, oh, yes, we like what you've done. We'll help finance you. And we will, you know, split the profits, however they were going to do it. Well, as it turned out, the company tried to steal the patents from him, and they had all the money and the lawyers and everything else, and he didn't have anything. He got so panic-stricken that he was having panic attacks, and he was walking and pacing. He was up all night. He was angry. He was bitter. He was furious. And he was going to fight this, and everybody told him, oh, just give in. You don't have the money to do it. And he said he was going to do it. So they went eventually out of this really was a terrible story because it went on for so long. But they went to the courthouse, and in the courtroom, he saw that he had lost. He looked at the judge, and he realized that he wasn't going to get a fair shake from this guy either. And the end of the first day, he came out just wanting to die. And he said, all of a sudden, he said, I saw standing in front of me St. Michael with the sword. And St. Michael said, we are here to do battle for you. And that was all he said. And the following day, the judge ruled in his favor, which was something that just shocked everyone. So today he is the proud owner of some 100-and-some trucks in his fleet, and he has regained all the money that he spent on the lawsuit plus. But most of all, he again saw during all of this that really the material parts of it were not what was important. He had forgotten God along the way, and when he went back to his prayer and his right way of looking at things, everything else worked out.
It turned around for him.
Mm-hmm.
In the recent Gulf Coast disaster, a lot of people, thousands and thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, displaced, left mm-hmm. homeless, loss of death or loss of life. What have you heard coming out of the Gulf Coast region? Are there any good stories of this nature coming out?
Well, I think here, I've been watching these kind of carefully. Yes, there were some interesting stories about how statues weren't damaged, you know, and trees would fall down right next to a statue and the statue would be fine. New Orleans is really a place with a lot of yard statues.
Yes.
I just could hardly believe it the times I've been there, how many of those there are. So that would be kind of an interesting but not a real unusual thing. I heard from one woman who said that a tree fell the wrong way on her property. If it had fallen the way it should have fallen, it would have killed her boys who were sleeping in a trailer. They didn't realize, you know, how strong the winds were and everything. But I would say those are ordinary type stories that you would get from after any natural disaster. I think what kind of struck me with this one was the sheer goodness of people, how people have turned into earth angels in order to help here. You don't seem to hear a lot about that after the first couple of days. You know, it's more what didn't get done or what is what. How much more they have to do. But the sheer numbers of people, the people that I knew personally that took a week off of work and went down there, the ones who loaded trucks, I mean, if it had happened, was happening in our neighborhood in Illinois, an obscure area, why wasn't it happening all over? I think it was. And it was just that there's so many people involved that it doesn't look as if you're getting anywhere. But to me, I thought, gosh, I hope no one ever knocks the American people again as a group, because we saw so much goodness and all of that coming out. And that's what all of this is about. I mean, the angels are calling us to do more, to be like them.
And those people down there still need a lot of help.
Yes, they do. Oh, my goodness, yes.
This is going to be an ongoing help effort for quite a while.
But it might, you know, all of it, not that you would have ever wanted it to happen, but if you look at the good things that come out of it, maybe the homes that are put up will be better than the ones that some of them lost. And maybe they'll have a fresh start in life, it was almost like, you know, a wind coming and blowing and washing away the things that needed to be thrown away, and new things will come now, maybe. I hope.
Yes. Now, are these encounters you're speaking of, and we've been talking about all night long, of the angels having some sort of intervention in people's lives, are these happening mainly in times of just total dire need, or you know, can people also have these encounters in normal, quiet times of peace,
or whatever?
I think
primarily in quiet time. I don't think that we have to be in a great seismic, you know, rattling going on in order for angels to come. Angels have been promised to us for our whole lives. And so no matter what kind of a situation we find ourselves in, we can rest assured that they are there with us. Most angel activity, I think, is anonymous. We look at the near misses on our expressways, or we we think, boy, that was lucky that I made it in before the storm hit, or other things. And we never think, maybe, you know, our Creator had a hand in that. Maybe our guardian angel was taking care of us. I mean, so often, just in one of my earlier books, I remember this woman writing me, she got in a car, and, you know, so many angel helps take place on expressways and highways because that's where so many of us are. And she said she was driving along, and it was not a real good night, but she was so far ahead of the traffic behind her in the dark that she felt she was just fine. It was like a six-lane highway, and she was all by herself, and then maybe a mile behind her were the headlights of another four or five cars. And she said she hit a patch of black ice, and she began to spin. And as she was spinning, she realized these cars were, you know, making their way towards her, and she was going to get crashed and probably hit them too. Mm-hmm. And she stopped spinning and was able to get the car pointed in the right direction, and she started off again, and she thought, where, oh, where are those cars? And she looked in her rear view, and they were still a mile behind her. There's no way that that could have been. She spun for at least 30 seconds. If they were going 60 or 70 miles an hour, they would have been on top of her at this point. Right. But once again, that halo and wings that we were talking about, the wings signify the moving through time and space, and time can be stopped if it's necessary for something to happen. And we thinks that's what happened just in that minute.
We have about 3 minutes left in this segment before we have to go to break. And there is a story I read in The Arms of Angels. Actually, I take that back. It was in The Power of Miracles, your miracle book, about an accident scene a gentleman came upon, and the woman or the car was on fire, and there was a woman inside that he was able to get in and save.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us that story real quick.
Well, you know, this is one of those things where you think, I'd never be able to be a hero, but you don't have the grace to be a hero now because you're not being called upon to be one. But here comes this couple along, and they see this car, apparently in an accident, hit a tree or something, and it's burning. And they leap out, and it's way too hot to get close enough. And yet this man just cannot give up on this woman. And he keeps trying to get her out, and she tells him, just leave me alone. And he said, no, I have to. He pulls her all the way out. Just an amazing thing. He was burned, but not burned anywhere near as much as you might think. And they asked her if there was anyone else in the car with her. And she said, no, just me and Jesus. So they never knew if she actually saw Jesus in the car, or if he was there, or if she was hallucinating. But they know that there had to be some kind of supernatural help there, because there was absolutely no way that they could have gotten her out of that car and not been burned the way it worked out.
Makes you feel good to hear stories like that.
It does, doesn't it?
And not only around this time of the year, but any time of the year. I'm talking with Joan Wester Anderson, and we're talking about angelic encounters, and we'll have more coming up, including your phone calls after the top of the hour. You're listening to Coast to Coast AM.